Welcome back to Dr. Brass Stocks. Remember, we're here with you until 12:30. 434-1790. You can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. And 266-IVOB is the chat you can use. And let's say good afternoon and welcome to the first call in the afternoon session. Good afternoon and welcome. Good afternoon and welcome. Well, I have some interesting WhatsApp messages here. Somebody.
Hello.
Yeah. Hey, good afternoon. Welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
I'm great. And yourself?
I am trying. The situation, as you would well appreciate, the situation is quite stressful and challenging, but I'm trying.
Good.
Thank you. Mm. Peter, when I hear you speaking of the Bible, I am reminded of the Roman official Felix, who according to the Bible, when he heard Paul teaching, he accused Paul of being a madman. Right, but Paul was able to offer a robust argument in presenting his case, and eventually the same Felix said, "Well, Paul, you know what? You almost persuaded me to become a Christian, but another time."
But you remember that the Apostle Paul was not very different to me before his Damascus moment, right? He was he was very much like me, but then after meeting Jesus, he became different.
Right.
So there is hope.
There's hope. You indicated that you approached former Prime Minister, Mr. Sandy
Saloid.
Saloid. And when you recognize that, you perhaps would have made statements, perhaps prematurely. Mm. And it's always beautiful. You know, life is about growth and development.
That's right.
And when one recognizes that you need to adjust, I mean, that's what it is about. So I commend you on that. But you've always, despite your several certain aspects of your deportment that I have some challenges with. Mm. The point is that I have always admired you for that strong quality you have, which is being able to say, you know, I was wrong.
Thank you, sir.
Right? But what I want to talk to you about today, Peter, I actually want to get to a subject I had raised earlier, but I just want to present my own little build-up. Now, actually, I'm starting with the Bible. Again, there's a statement in the Bible which accuses certain persons of having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. In other words, it seems to be suggesting that some people can present a kind of superficial facade. But for those of us who like to go beneath the surface, as you say, who search for evidence-based positions, right? The Bible is saying you will recognize that some of them are not particularly sincere or genuine. I want to say that is how I personally rate democracy in Barbados. Right? In my opinion, in a true democracy, and by that I mean a properly managed and organized state, I mean a state that comes to mind immediately, like Norway, perhaps Canada, those places, right? There are certain indispensable prerequisites. You need to have, in my opinion, an intellectually enlightened and empowered citizenry. You must have persons with the integrity and the strength, right, to stand up for what we call principles, right? Your ordinary citizens must have a personal sense, a personal and indeed a collective sense of empowerment, and the confidence that when they have grievances, they will be treated fairly. That reassurance that you can have recourse if you feel wrong. Now, what I consider Barbados a society, I want to suggest to you, Peter, that if we were to speak to let me leave that one. If you were to speak to the unfortunate NCC workers who were, in my opinion, unjustly deprived of their livelihood in a manner so shocking and nasty that it appeared, in my estimation, to border on state-sponsored thuggery and nobody be held to account. I do not think that persons like that would consider Barbados to be a just society. If we remember the case of the former governor of the central bank, Dr. Wirral, I wonder whether he would consider Barbados to be a truly just and fair society. I want to bring you, Mr. Wickham, now to the defamation legislation in Barbados, because that's what I really want to hear you speak on, right? But I just want to make this point first. I have noticed that in Barbados, when ordinary Barbadians are charged and found guilty before the law court, their names are splashed all over the place, where they live, the families, where they work, etc., etc. These people can't sue nobody, right?
Because it's not untrue.
Right. good point. Now, I read in the Nation newspaper of the 17th of January, yes, 2020, and the headline screamed, guilty, guilty, guilty. The article then went on to outline that, to detail that a former Barbados cabinet minister had been convicted in an American court. On three counts,
mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, I seem to find when you attempt to discuss that on air on in Barbados, it seems to be sort of anathema. You can't go there, right? No.
But,
before you respond.
No, the producer is protesting. You know.
Hello?
No, I mean, but the matter is settled. I mean, he's been found guilty. Yeah.
Right. And right, even though he has right of appeal, we know what his current status is.
No, but I don't know that anyone has been prevented from discussing that on this year. From the time he was found guilty, it was. But I went on ad nauseum one day and saying that he could be, because that's another conversation. But the reality is I don't believe the vast majority of Barbadians have judged him harshly on the matter. I think that the vast majority of Barbadians still have a lot of use for Donville. And indeed, a lot more use for him than a lot of the others that have gotten knocking about there. You don't remember that conversation?
I don't, but I must confess.
And I didn't see Dennis pressing the button, so clearly we could talk about it.
But I must confess that my main growth has to do with an attempt, when I attempted to raise it on another station.
Well, that's the problem.
With a presenter whom you say likes to hear himself. I just mentioned that. But what
on another station?
On another station.
Well, that's why I tell you all, don't call up there. When you talk, call down here.
When you were, they used to call too.
There's the real talk, the real place.
Right. All right.
It was different then when I was there.
I think David is going to promote you. You're doing some great ads in promoting the station. But Peter, I want you to comment on the defamation legislation in Barbados. I want you to take a brief look at its history, the context and purpose in of where it was actually imposed. I want you to look briefly at the damage it would have inflicted on the psyche and culture of Barbadians over the decades. I would like you to comment on how restrictive and throttling it is to local media. I want you to look on its impact on democracy, if we do indeed have a real democracy. I would like you, I hope you don't know this, juxtapose it with, for instance, the defamation legislation in South Africa, which has only been a democracy from 1994, and how the press there was able to bring down President Jacob Zuma, and currently he's before the law courts on a million corruption charges, right?
Okay.
Before you respond, I'm going to shut up in a minute. In fact, I'm going to have to let you go. But I just want to say this. I want to assert that if that unsavory character, Richard Nixon, had perpetrated his Watergate nastiness in Barbados, I think he would have gotten away with it. It seems to me that the law in Barbados would be more concerned with going after the two journalists who actually, Bob Burwood and Carl Bernstein, who eventually brought him down, rather than going after Richard Nixon, right? So, and I just want to comment.
Quickly,
I just want to comment as well on why the local media is not up in arms, protesting vigorously against this anti-democratic legislation.
Well, the quick answer is that the media is up in arms, and one of the concerns the media has had for a long time is the fact that our defamation position is too excessive. So, I'm going to frankly suggest that that's a conversation you probably need to have with either David or Dennis. Dennis, largely because he is the person that does most of the producing, so he has to be the most familiar with what people can and cannot say on the air. There are two things that we have to be observant of, and certainly I don't have to concern myself with it because I don't do the cutting. Dennis has to, because he is the person that has to know when and where to cut. If you say something about someone that is likely to be interpreted as being not true, that's cut. If you say something to someone that is likely to be in poor taste, and I think that the poor taste thing is more a station position. The station has policies regarding poor taste. And the easiest one is that, you know, you're not supposed to stroop suck callers. And that's something that I run afoul of all the time. So when I hear nonsense talking, sometimes it's hard for me not to express myself. And that's a policy that we should not breach in the station.
Okay.
Use of certain words which are not cuss words but are considered poor taste are also things that we don't do. But apparently the issue with defamation, as I understand it from the perspective of journalists, has been that you are not allowed fair comment in the way that you believe you should. So we believe that we ought to be able to comment on situations that are in the public domain more freely. And we are not able to do so because of the way that the defamation laws are interpreted. If I am told that if you are to sue me for defamation, then there needs to be an opportunity to prove that what I said was not true, right? If, however, you the station broadcast information, it's easier to come after the station. Once we can demonstrate that the station did not have a genuine intention in terms of something we said about you, then the station is liable. And I think that has been, over the years, the major concern that the journalistic community has had about their ability to treat the issues. For me personally, sir, it's not a problem, largely because I don't say nothing about nobody, really. And I have never found it to be challenging. I have been threatened with a lawsuit on two occasions. One of them, it was well within the public domain because it was read out on a political platform. That had to do with my suggestions about a check that somebody received. You would understand the details from there, and that was discussed on the program. The thing is that the check was real, and it was subsequently published in the newspaper, so there could be no question as to my running afoul of the defamation. And the other one was when I called someone a hypocrite. I received a letter from her lawyer, which to me is, I mean, the classic case of fair comment. Either she's a hypocrite or she's not, and I thought that the evidence was fairly obvious that she was. But other than that, I haven't had challenges. And I do feel that the Association of Journalists over the years has perhaps not been as vociferous in trying to seek modifications. I know that here at the station, we have had Sir David come in on one occasion at least and carry essentially a seminar explaining to us what we can and cannot do, because there is also a feeling in the legal community that we over-censor ourselves unnecessarily because of this fear of lawsuits. And in many instances, we cut things that don't need to be cut. So, but as I said, Dennis is the better person to speak to it. I think, yes, it should be more of an issue for the journalistic community. My thing is that it's not really my thing, largely because I am not I'm not a real journalist in the scheme of things. So next time Dennis is on, I think he's on tomorrow. He's on tomorrow.
Yeah, I just want to respond before you go, though. Mm-hmm. Right. You said that as far as you are aware, the media is up in arms against it. Well, that's not the impression I get. I seem to think that they're quite cowed by the legislation. And what I think has happened with it, between that legislation and the militia that was stationed at the garrison Savannah, what they have effectively done, in my estimation, is cold the persona of Barbadians. We have become so timid and afraid that in many cases, when, like you said, a person might not actually be saying anything, which is legally defamation. You know, the whole culture of concealment and timidity. You can't say that. You can't touch certain secrets.
Yeah, but you also have to put that in the context of the history. And the challenge is that the media environment in Barbados right now is, one could argue that the media has been weakened by virtue of overtime. A lot of the senior journalists have either died or moved on or whatnot. It's not a particularly well-paid profession. And as a result, it has difficulty defending itself. You look at the case that David Thompson was involved in before he died, where this station was sued by Ms. Ram Merchandani. And to the best of my knowledge, is that still in the courts, Dennis? Yeah, it's still in the courts. And that is all 20 years later. It becomes expensive, and it becomes right. Burdensome for an organization to have to continue to take on these issues over a period of time. So regardless of how that case ends, right? It has been an expensive and time-consuming distraction for an entity like this that has so many other financial woes to deal with. And I think that in many instances, what we have taken is the path of least resistance. We say, look, so that we don't run into a situation where somebody sues us and we have to defend ourselves, which is going to be expensive, let's just ensure we don't get sued.
Right. You err on the side of caution.
Right. So I shouldn't call the woman a hypocrite.
But...
even though I feel strongly that she is, don't call her hypocrite, and that way the matter don't end up in court.
But you perhaps can use the technique of the late Eric Seeley, because, you know, there was a case some years ago, and there was an injunction and instructing him not to say that so-and-so. And he came and said, but the court tell me you can't say that Mr. So-and-so, say that so-and-so, kill Victor Pilia Paris. So maybe you can use those sort of strategies. But seriously, though, I think that as a culture, right, as a culture, we are at the stage. I listen to calling shows on other parts of the Caribbean, and I find that
they're more aggressive, of course.
Right. I listen to Calypso.
They call people thief and all kind of thing.
Yes.
So yeah, but the fact is, sir, that when you call somebody a thief in Trinidad, it's not necessarily defamatory. When you call someone a thief in Barbados, it means that the thief money.
But in Barbados, even if you said, I don't like people who steal, that's right. That's not defamatory in itself. But then you go on out to speak.
But if I say to you, I don't like people who steal, and use one of the reasons that I don't like you, then you defame my character.
Seriously,
you see, the whole thing, sir, is part of a cultural thing, and that's why I say that when you call somebody an old thief in Trinidad, it's not considered a thing, because an old thief is what it is.
Okay.
When you call somebody an old thief in Barbados, that is a serious thing. It means that the person actually stole money.
Yeah.
You know? In some cases, they might have, but,
You keep saying it's cultural, but culture really is about attitudes that have built up over time. You know, I'm sorry to take you back into the Bible again, but Jesus himself said, this man's statements are so profound, because he accused, according to the Bible, the religious authorities in his day, by your traditions, by your culture, you've made of none effect the real truth of God, teaching instead the traditions and doctrines of men. So what often happens is that we can become so entrenched and so rutted in the quote-unquote traditions and cultures and norms that sometimes we fail to see the light. And those of us who have the courage, like Dr. Worrell and Dr. Warren, to speak up and speak out, very often we pay some very heavy prices. I really would like to see the media more vigorous.
I don't know that the Worrell and Waldron example is appropriate in this instance, though. Because neither of those individuals would have been prevented from speaking on the basis of any defamation laws. It's a question of when do you feel it is appropriate for you to step out from behind your professional responsibility and an organizational restriction and speak openly because you believe you're being true to yourself. I think that's the issue. So in the case of Dr. Waldron, what was the other one? Worrell, right. Is Dr. Worrell right in saying that while I have a responsibility to the organization that I serve, which is the government, should I not be true to myself and speak in the way that he spoke? And people have been given knighthoods for less, So you commend their bravery in both instances, which is not to say that we can't condemn the position they've taken, but certainly we would commend their bravery. And I wouldn't say that that has anything to do with a defamation culture. Yeah. We need more of that, I think. But, the question is the circumstances. Sir, I want to thank you for the contribution. And we had a good long chat on matters professional and biblical. And I hope that we can chat again next week when I'm on the air. So until then, do take care of yourself. Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790 is the number that you can call. Remember, we are with you until 2 p.m. Let's get a couple of things clear. I've received communication from someone within the hospital management to make it clear that no one has threatened to dismiss Dr. Waldron. He's been given a charge sheet to answer regarding breaking the terms of his contract, and as such, the headline for the Midday News was misleading. In that regard, I have a WhatsApp message from someone who is saying that they believe the Waldron issue demonstrates that there's no room for opinion in Barbados. They are suggesting that the persons suggesting that, I'm trying to read it without putting anybody in any legal jeopardy. COVID is going nowhere, and it's responsible not to prepare in the QEH to perform major surgery on a positive patient. I believe Barbadians need to hear whether they're willing to let a COVID patient die if they need major surgery. And it's not the critically ill COVID patient, but the asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic patients that seems to may have a surgical problem, what will they do? And that could be any one of us. A couple of misunderstandings seem to confound the individual that responded to me. As I understand it, the surgical facility that is available at Emmore, as I listened to Dr. Cave on the radio, is a surgical facility that can handle most major surgeries, presuming that you find a surgeon who is willing to operate him there. The impression that I am getting is Mr. Waldron is arguing that he does not think that that facility is satisfactory, while Dr. Cave is suggesting that the surgery is satisfactory. I had the good fortune of reading a report, as much as sense as I can make of it, being non-engineering and also non-medical, on the negative pressure facility at the Enmore location. And that suggests that the pressure requirements are consistent with what is being demanded of the surgeons. The issue seems to be elsewhere regarding other facilities that do not make the Enmore facility appropriate. But let's be clear, there is no one in the hospital management, as far as I can see, that is suggesting that no surgeries should be performed on COVID positive patients. What the suggestion is, however, is that those surgeries can be performed over at the Enmore facility, and that is the best that we can do under these circumstances. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Vickham. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good, sir. I'm good. Go right ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I'm listening to you. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, I want to speak a bit on this, something called a bio-bubble. But before I go into that, and you asked a gentleman a question came out of the Bible. There's a gentleman called, there's a professor, Craig Considine, C-O-N-S-I-D-I-N-E, Department of Sociology at Rice University. He had an article in Newsweek from March 17, 2020, and it says, can the power of prayer alone stop a pandemic like the coronavirus? That's a very, very nice question. Actually, the information he gives shows that our government is 99% correct in their procedure, trying to contain it. They may have made one slight error. And if you read the article from Newsweek from March 17, 2020, by Craig Considine, it's at the Department of Sociology at Rice University, it was perhaps make an adjustment. Now, there's something called a bio bubble, yeah? You will not be old enough to remember the movie called The Boy in a Plastic Bubble. It's a true story that they made a movie out of it by John Travolta in 1976. It's actually a containment, and I was wondering if the bio bubble would be viable for coronavirus. It will protect everybody outside of the bubble and also protect the patient inside of the bubble. It uses a filter made of a material called HEPA, H-E-P-A. This is very efficient. I think it strains out 99.98% of viruses, etc. I've never heard any of the medical people speak about it. Have you ever heard of it?
I don't know, but I mean, isn't that what you're trying to do in smaller islands like Barbados, essentially, to create a bubble? If you isolate an island and you ensure that everyone over a period of time is COVID negative, theoretically, you're creating a bubble, no?
No, it's an actual physical bubble. Mm-hmm. Where the patient is inside the bubble, everything inside is sterilized. But you can also use it to filter anything coming out of the bubble. That's what I'm saying. It's an astrophysical bubble. The boy in the plastic bubble. If anybody can go online and see.
All right, no problem. So you're suggesting that this is what we should do now?
No, I'm wondering if that might be a solution to some of the problems. It will protect the frontline workers coming in. Because you can have access points to these from outside to the patient. You don't have to go inside with the patient. But everything, what happened, it was two fellows who were susceptible to any all kind of allergies and stuff, but they would look at everything, and if they came inside, they would die. But there was, like I said, it was made into a movie. But today we call it a biobubble, and it's used for many things. It's used in hospitals too for containment of viruses, etc., and contamination. But I won't go into any further. I just like somebody from the medical profession to come in and see if they know about it and if it would be viable for our situation. Anyway, you have a good afternoon.
Hi, sir. Thanks a lot. 434-1790. Feel free to call me or feel free to WhatsApp me on 266-IVOB or alternatively, you can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. I have a nice, lovely WhatsApp message, which unfortunately I can't read, but I just got one from my friend Wayne. Dr. Brastacks, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Probably not as good as you, but...
Well, you may be better.
But hanging in there.
Yeah.
And Mr. Johnson and the host, right?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Johnson is the He's the overseer today.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, about 5 or 6 years ago, right, I called the program, and I tell Mr. Johnson there's a book he should read called The Cosmic Question, written by a man called John Keel, right? Now, if you read this book, you would see where all of this COVID SARS, all of these things are coming from. And remind Mr. Johnson and ask him if he did read the book, The Cosmic Question. And it's written by John Keel. Right? That's really all I wanted to say. Then you would see where all this SARS and all this stuff coming from. Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right. All right, sir. Thank you for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks, 4341790. Good afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome.
Glad to get through to this program at this time.
Good to hear you, sir.
Glad to hear you again. Due to COVID virus and the shutdown of the island, I believe that this is high time for the government to implement some traffic strategies for Bridgetown. A lot of people haven't mentioned this, but I remember that I have brought up this conversation a couple of years ago when there was speaking about flyovers. And it wasn't really carried by nobody, actually. It just passed as another conversation on Brass Tacks. David Ellis was the host at the time.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead and make your point. I'm listening.
Yes. One of the implementations that I have, strategies I have mentioned, is that the schools could open earlier, which they are now doing. So schools used to open, every school used to open at 9 o'clock. Now they are opening schools from like 8 o'clock, 8:15, 8:30, 8:20, 8:40. And you get schools, so the time is not one time. Everybody is just spaced out. But the problem that I still have is that even with this administration of government in lockdown, no one have been taking time out to look at the transportation and the traffic situations in and around Bridgetown. Now, when the COVID virus came and shut down the island, I think it was perfect timing because we could now regulate all the traffic times and all the work times in the city, hereby breathing life into Bridgetown again. Let me explain what I mean. Now, in, I think it was in 1999, I think it, that was the time that they were talking about the flyovers. I think it was 1999. But I said to the in the call-in program with David Ellis that what the government should do right now, this administration, is that the government should open pharmacies as early as 6 o'clock in the morning. Because at 6 o'clock in the morning, most of the people in the city are vendors that are bringing down, or are farmers bringing down their produce to be displayed for sale. The post office could open at 9 o'clock. Sorry, not 9 o'clock, 7 o'clock. And the pharmacies as well. Because people need medicine for their safety. And delivery vehicles don't need to be in Bridgetown at 11 and 12 o'clock during the day. government offices such as probation, department, water authority, the bank, and appliance stores don't need to open until about 10 o'clock. For food, Chofet, the other food shops in the city and KFC, and the clothing stores and hair stores, these also could open until 11 o'clock. So as to ease the congestion of traffic in the morning period of rush hour time. I don't know what you think, but I'm going
to
pause.
I think you're onto something. The fact is that we have done too little with flexi time over the years. Look, you have a window between 7 a.m. and 10 in the morning. You take it to 11, but you can do that even if you want to. When most business places theoretically can stagger their opening, and then they will stagger their closing after 4 o'clock, and they can run until 6 or 7. I think that it's reasonable that that type of thinking should be part of our dialogue at this stage, even before COVID, but certainly now even more so. There will be some agencies like this one where that is simply not possible. My understanding is that here we do a bit of that work from home, where some of the salespeople operate more or less on their own time schedule using their cell phone. But the reality is that, yes, we need to be a lot more proactive in terms of using flexi time. And there would not be a better time than this to implement some of those rules. My challenge where this issue comes up, though, is that Barbados has one challenge with the movement of people. And this relates to the school allocation and the 11-plus exam. The 11-plus exam, in theory, can take a student who is resident in St. Lucie and send that child to school in St. Philip at Princess Margaret, which is, it makes no sense. It's crazy, and it puts tremendous strain on our transportation system. The problem, however, is that we are not in a position to address that, to send the Philippine to school at Princess Margaret and send the St. Lucian to school at St. Lucie Secondary until we are in a... I'm sorry?
And St. Andrew, too.
There's a school in St. Andrew? There's a school in St. Andrew?
Aline?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't. Yeah, my mistake. Sorry, Dennis was trying to send some information to me. Right. So the point is that until we are able to do that, then we will always have this problem where transportation is concerned. Because once schools are in session, it gets crazy, and it gets crazy because people from all over the island are going to all over the island to school. And I think that part has to be part of the whole conversation as well. One of my sincerest regrets, sir, is that we missed the opportunity to discontinue the 11 plus a year early. And I was particularly saddened when I heard the announcement that we're still going to have that awful exam this year, notwithstanding the fact that we plan to cancel it next year. I feel we should have taken the opportunity to get out of it a year early, and let's bring some order and regulation to the allocation of schools in Barbados and to help deal with some of the problems that you're talking about. All right, sir?
Well, Peter, the thing I'm saying is that, as you have mentioned, when the schools are in is where we get the biggest problem.
Right.
But the government just reopened businesses, many businesses in the city, and their times are all 8 till 4.
Right, so you've made the point, and I've agreed with you that there's more that we can do in that regard.
But I'm saying...
Yeah, but the thing is that you can't tell a store that sells clothes. Right now, stores can open almost 24 hours. As far as I know, there's no... is that correct, Dennis? Yeah. As far as I know, there's no limitation on the time that a store can open and close, right? So, for example, you have some of the supermarkets that open on Sundays and they open fairly liberal hours. You have... Right, and I'm saying that's not something that you legislate. You give them the opportunity to stagger their opening and closing hours, and it's up to them to do it. I mean, there's no reason why a store that sells clothes can't open 24 hours or a supermarket can't open 24 hours. There's nothing to stop them from doing it.
I don't have no problem with these things happening, Peter. Mm-hmm. What I have a problem with is in and around Bridgetown. This is my main concern. This is the heart of the transport.
You know why I would disagree with you? Because I think that we have problems in Six Crossroads. We have problems in Warrens, and we have problems in Servants Village. We have problems in town centers. So Warrens now is Warrens has become a more critical town center than Bridgetown in many instances, because all the government's major agencies are in Warrens now.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that still, if we stagger the time of the businesses in the city, it will alleviate a lot of this.
You ain't understanding the point I'm making, that the businesses you probably need to stagger more are the ones in Warrens.
But even in Warrens, government...
Okay. And I am agreeing with that point. So I'm saying to you, sir, you're right. So it's not a point of disagreement.
No, I'm saying that you disagree. What I'm saying is the government offices all open at the same time.
And sir, I agree with you that they shouldn't.
They need to.
And I agree with you that they shouldn't. So you're trying to pick an argument, and in the argument, I'm agreeing with you that they should not open all at the same time. I said in the beginning, we have a window between 7 and 10, and I think that the opening should be staggered. The closing should also be staggered up to 7 o'clock. I am agreeing. All right, sir?
Right, I agree.
Thanks a lot for calling, sir. It was good chatting with you. I appreciated the opportunity to discuss that issue.